This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Raptors with a big one tonight, taking on Philly. And the Raptors GM, Bobby Webster, will join us at 5:30. We're looking forward to catching up with Bobby, and we'll get him to elaborate on Masai Ujiri's comments from yesterday, where he said they're going to die trying to win another championship, which I appreciate. It's a statement. You have to interpret what that means. Is that just the players are going to do it and the coach is going to die trying, or will the front office die trying, which means everything's on the table in terms of a trade or maybe multiple trades between now and the trade deadline in a couple of weeks. So we'll catch up with Bobby in about a half an hour. Ray Ferraro will join us in about 5 minutes, our TSN hockey analyst, on TSN.ca's top 50 list that was revealed today, halfway through the NHL season.
Yep.
And no one's surprised that Connor McDavid is sitting at number one. That's where I had him. I'm sure you guys all had McDavid at one.
Let's go through the top 10 quickly.
McDavid 1, McKinnon 2, Pasternak 3, Draisaitl 4, Panarin 5, Jack Eichel 6, Austin Matthews 7, John Carlson 8, Brad Marchand 9, Alex Ovechkin 10. Any debates there through the top 10 on TSN.ca or what?
I think I had Panarin 3 right now this year.
I had Panarin 5, I believe. Draisaitl 4, I had Pasternak. No, I had Draisaitl 3, Pasternak 4, but that was my top 5. I had it a little bit different, 3, 4, 5.
But I think any kind of mix of that is basically where it's at.
I had Malkin in there.
In the top 5?
Yeah, I had him at 4.
He's been very good.
I had him ahead of Draisaitl. I had McDavid, McKinnon, Pasternak, Malkin, Draisaitl, Panarin. So, it's so subjective. I had a spirited debate with the quizmaster this morning because how I break my list down is I do forwards, defense, and goaltending, and do my rankings within those, and then I intertwine them. And I thought it was interesting that Hellebuck, who's been the best goalie this year, he came in at 23. So that's how little a goaltender is valued with the idiots that do this list. That's basically what I said.
I had him at 18. I had Hellebuck at 18.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, so what I'm saying is like, you know, a guy can go dry, one of these goal scorers in the top 10 can go dry for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 15 games. Mm-hmm. 2 goals in 15 games. That's fine as long as they've got enough goals to make the list. But a goaltender goes dry for 2, 10 games, whatever. Nope, they've got to go farther down on that list. So that was the spirited debate.
I think there's a lot of validity there. I think defensemen would probably have a similar argument.
And I didn't disagree with that because I think we all do this exercise probably the same. You go through and then you're like, oh, I forgot a defenseman. So you plug in a defenseman, push people around. Oh, yeah, forgot a goalie. Plug in and push around. Like, there's no great formula to this.
Well, I had that experience myself. I forgot to put Seth Jones in my top 50, and I made that revisement yesterday. I called or sent an email to the quizmaster and said, I forgot Seth Jones. He's not even in the top 50. Right. Like, here I am thinking, what an idiot. How could I not have Seth Jones? No one on Columbus is in the list. Nobody.
Yeah.
They're in the playoffs. Seth Jones plays 25, 27 minutes a night. I love Shea Weber. Weber made it. I think Jones is better.
Me too.
And Jones did not make it.
I think a lot better, actually.
I think Jones, if I was building a team right now for the next 5 years, just defensemen, I would go Hedman 1, Jones 2. I really do think I would go Jones 2.
Well, like, I mean, he's been that, like, Werenski's been probably just as good as him. That's the scary
And he's
part.
Another guy that could have been in there.
Werenski was on my list. When I did my list, I was like, Columbus has 60 points. How can I not have somebody from Columbus on that team?
Right.
And it was a toss-up between Jones and Werenski, and I think I tried to slide them both in there. Ultimately, what's great about these lists, they're subjective, they're opinionated, and people yell and scream about them. But
that's why
it's how we
TSN loves it.
It's how we. My only complaint about this is how much time we have to put into it, because we're very busy, and you have to grind through. And then I sometimes
mine was a solid hour.
When I do,
I get the pages I need right in front of me, and I'm like, yeah, that's about right for you scoring wise. You're good. You're pretty good. You've been dominating. And then I'll be like, I miss that guy, this guy. And
but that's the thing. I sleep on the list, and then I revisit it. Because when you revisit it, you're like, nah, that guy's too high. Oh, yeah. Why is that? Why did I forget? I'll be honest. I had one list where I forgot Jack Eichel. Like, flat out forgot him. Like, which is ridiculous.
And obviously an omission. Like, you clearly
omission.
Would have him in the top 10.
I actually think I had him in the top 10.
Yeah.
If not, he was 11. But he was flat out, like, I one list, I forgot him.
Sid, please tell me Sid got in there.
Sid is on it. Sid is at 22, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's just because of missed time.
Oh, yeah. He would be higher if he didn't miss time, but I had
what are you laughing at?
I didn't have him in my top 50. I did not have Crosby in the top 50.
Well, here's a question that...
Because he didn't... Dude, he missed 28 games.
Yeah.
Like, I love Sidney
Crosby.
He's
one of those guys where he's going in no matter what. Like,
but it's not a list of who are my favorite players or who do I think is the best player or who will be in the top 50 for the remaining 30 games.
Right.
It's the first 40 games or 45, and he missed 28 of them.
I flat out contradicted myself because I put Sid on there, but I didn't put Dougie Hamilton on because he's injured the rest of the year.
And Hamilton played 40 games.
I know. But I flat out will admit the contradiction that I did.
Right. It's tough. I mean, it is tough because there's a lot of great players, and you can't watch everyone play every night either.
Right.
Like, you're basing it on stats and a lot of different material, and it leads to the debate that we're having right now.
Correct.
Joining us down the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. You took part in the top 50, right, Ray?
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't miss it.
Oh, it's always great. We seem to have the same conversation every time, that you can get through about 10, 15, 20 players, and you'll have them listed a little bit differently, but once you get to about 25 through, like, 75, you have no idea what you're supposed to do.
Well, you know how you make this stop. All of us say to the quizmaster, not in our contracts, extra 5K for our list. Then we don't do the list.
He'll do it himself, and he'd probably prefer that anyway.
Probably be a better list.
Yeah, probably would be.
Yeah, it would be very
thoughtful. Why don't we just leave it to him next year? Just say, go ahead.
No, the ultimate slap in the face, which he would not appreciate, is if you cut and paste his guideline and just use that as your list.
I think there's a part of him that wants that.
He would come through the phone and scissor kick you. So, no, I actually, once you get into the exercise, it's really good, but
getting to it is a battle
because I find it adds a bit of stress because I start to overthink things.
Well, I find it's like my taxes. I keep having a intention of getting started. And then I'm like, holy smokes, I got to get this done.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like to me. And I like doing the little bit of the research for it because I'm like, man, I forgot about that guy. Or you think, you don't quite realize what a good season somebody else is having. And the one complaint you hear pretty consistently from, like, if you're on a station in Calgary or Edmonton, it's, you hear all those Toronto guys, they don't watch our market. You can't watch 3,000 hockey games a year. So, of course, you're going to see some guys more than you see others. And you're not going to have somebody rated as high that you don't see as much, most likely. And then you got to dig into the stats and you got to try and visualize what you see with what the stats are telling you. And then you end up with a list that's imperfect. But the reason they do it is because it always spurs some kind of conversation.
Yeah, it always does. And, goaltenders, Noodles made the case for them prior to you coming on. I think defensemen.
They should have their own list.
Yeah, that might be the way to go. But.
It is. It's tough because I made a joke about it that, we can see these guys.
Tell them what you said to us.
I said, flat out. I don't know what my verbiage was, is these idiots who vote decide that a goaltender, like, for example, Connor Hellebuck's been the best goaltender who's hit the ditch lately, and he drops all the way down in people's minds to mid-20s, where a goal scorer in the top 10 could dry up for 13 games and score two goals in 13 games, but we don't factor that in. We just look at the end result. So
okay, so I got Hellebuck at 20, so am I an idiot, one of these idiots?
I think you are.
Me and Brian are.
We all are. I had
I'm
him at 18.
Saying, so, no,
I had him at 11 or something.
I had him at 11, too.
Goalie, though, Noodles, does that count for anything?
What's that?
I have him for the best goalie. Does that count for anything?
I was teasing with the word idiot. It was a very...
No, that's okay.
It was a derogatory. I apologize.
Don't apologize.
My point being is that I just find it tough that if that's the most important position, but yet... A guy who's got 22 goals and had a great season by his standards, like how do you measure a goaltender against that? Like where?
Well,
that's
it,
why I think you migrate them together.
We have that conversation all the time on this show, where you will take issue as a lifelong goalie and someone who knows them much better than anyone else on this conversation and anyone else in the building or on the street or whatever. I find that the stats don't help the goaltenders in conversations with guys that are informed like you are. What I mean by that is, if I came to you and said, well, this guy's got a .935 save percentage, he's the best goalie, you'll be like, no, he's not. Where if a guy's got 40 goals, he's the best goal scorer.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, you look at the stats for the players and you're like, this guy's unbelievable.
And let's just do it by position.
But that's why it's so great. This is it's a great spirited debate. Like, I'm defending the goaltenders. There's going to be a defenseman out there going, hold on a second, John Carlson's dominating this league statistically. Why is he not in the top three? Which, you know...
That's valid. I understand where that's coming
from. I think it's a valid argument, but it depends on what you value. I try to be subjective. That's why I think Connor Hellebuck... I think a couple weeks ago I told you I had him in my top five.
Right.
I took him out because of his last little stretch here. But I also, you know, I have to be honest about other players, too. I went through and looked at, you know, Patty Kane, for example, had three goals in 12 games to start the season. That wasn't, you know, top 50 worthy. But then he came on and he's Patrick Kane. And, you know, so like to me, there's all different excuses if you want to dig into it. I don't know what the formula is as to where to start those, for lack of better words, non-statistical positions like goaltending or defense.
So in my mind, the best way to do it is to not have the goalies on the list. You're picking the best 50 skaters in the league, and then you have a, you know,
top 20 goalies.
Your five or seven best goalies. Because I do think it's impossible to, in most cases, compare a goalie to a left winger. Like how do you how do you do it? I struggle with that every time when I'm, you know, when I'm trying to put this list together.
Yeah, so
I'm like,
do I.
I don't know. Like, you get all of a sudden, I've got all these skaters, and I'm like, holy crap, I got no goalies. Okay, so I literally start with no goalies, and then I just drop them in, and then I go, no, that doesn't look right either, and I move them around, and they screw up the drill for me every time.
I don't disagree with you. I believe that there should be a separate list, and you can just do like a top five or top 10. Like, you don't need to do, like, because realistically, now with the platoon system, like, does Ben Bishop deserve to be when his backup has almost played as much as him?
Right. Well, so, Darcy Kemper, who got injured.
Right.
But Kemper only had 25 starts, I believe, and he's in the top 50.
Right. So,
Tristan Jarry.
If I wanted to protect Connor Hellebuck's stats, well, Laurent Brossoit would start eight more games. And we'll see how that goes with that defensive core. Like, you know, that's what I, you know, that's my argument, because I have a formula where I look at starts, wins, save percentage, have saves that he's been forced to make. Like, Freddie Anderson's one of the busiest goaltenders in the league, so is Hellebuck. Like, there's so many different factors that come into it. So, yeah, there's stretches where they've been pulled or they've been terrible. I don't value that any less than a guy who's dried up for 10 games.
Yeah, that's valid. That is valid. And that, I mean, it doesn't, it's a list. It doesn't really matter. It's always fun to go over, and I'm sure a lot of people will. So go to tsn.ca and fire off jabs at us for why we're all idiots.
Yeah, Ray, we were talking earlier in the show about like commitment to playoffs and where you think your team is at. There was a quote from the Raptors, Masai Ujiri, saying they're going to die trying to make them better or something to that effect. Where do you think their team is at as far as approaching the trade deadline and what you would do or what the players deserve or need or just any kind of angle you would take?
You mean for any team or for the Leafs?
Just the Leafs.
I think they have to take a look and say, okay, this is where we are. How many pieces is it going to take to make us significantly better? Because to get a few points better, I would stay pretty well past. If I can find a deal that makes my team significantly better, then I'd be really, really interested in it. I would be really careful about sacrificing three quarters of my future for right now, because eventually, no, not eventually, very soon, it'll be that future that you don't have any draft picks for. Because one thing we do know is that when you trade your picks, those players play younger now than they've ever played before. And if you have a hole in your development chain, where you've traded a first, a couple of seconds, a couple of thirds over a three-year period, all of a sudden you have no players in a certain age group. And you get to that pretty quickly. Look, I think there are times we overreact with how good the Leafs are or how bad they are. But if they can't find a way to better their defense in a significant manner, I wouldn't be blowing out assets all over the place for the future. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't worry that, oh my God, we're wasting a potential 50-goal year from Austin Matthews. I want to make the team as good as I can, but I can't do it for all this year and say, oh, we'll figure it all out next year. That's bad. That's bad management, man. You're going to get burned on that for sure.
Yeah, I think the players have 14 games between now and the trade deadline to make the decision for Kyle Dubas. And I know that's not a popular take here in Toronto because people want him to be on the trade call today. Like, be ready, have someone in Nashville on Monday to play. But you're on the outside of the playoffs looking in. You already don't have your first-round pick. If you miss, it's going to Carolina. Even if you make, it's going to Carolina. But you got 14 games to figure this out. And I think it's all on the players. And I have an appreciation for that because it should be on the players. Yeah, they've got injuries, and that's legitimate. But every team has injuries. Mm-hmm. A lot of them got paid and got paid a lot of money. Let's go. Like I it's disappointing and frustrating that they're in a position like this, year four of the Matthews, Marner, Nylander era, where you are even having this conversation. Should they do this? Should they do that? But that's who they are through 49 games. It's all self-inflicted. They put themselves in this position, and I'm with you, Ray. Dubas can't spend like a drunken sailor. He can't get stupid here because they might miss anyway. Imagine you go out and load up on all these players and trade picks and assets and you miss.
Yeah, that would.
Then you're really in trouble.
Well, I mean, for 25 years, Detroit made the playoffs. And, you know, they started to mortgage their future more and more and more as Datsuk and Zetterberg and Lidstrom got older, and they traded more and more draft picks. And then a couple of those picks that they do have, they don't hit. And then all of a sudden, you're where they are now. At least Detroit had success, and they were willing to take those risks because of the success they had, and the players were getting older. They don't, I mean, the fans probably don't want to agree with this, but they don't need to take those risks in Toronto yet. They're going to get some cap relief. They're going to be able to remake their defense in the summer. They'll have decisions to make, but with only Riley under contract, they can completely remake that group. You'll have Sandin there, of course, but will you re-sign Travis Dermott? Now you've got Justin Hall signed. Will you re-sign Jake Muzzin? Well, you'll have Timothy Liljegren. Like, they're going to change a lot of that defense, and they'll have some cap room because you'll blow out CeCe's $5 million, right? Like, that's gone for sure. They'll make some movement up front. But maybe you can't do that right now, even if you want to. Maybe you just can't do it right now.
Yeah, I think that makes all the sense in the world. Because I think that's going to happen anyway. Like, even if they get in, go on a run, there's going to be a lot of turnover and change here, and it has to happen.
Tyson Barry.
He's gone, too.
Yeah, Tyson Barry, he's out the door for sure. But I like it. I mean, it's on the players. Like, in a market like this, and it probably applies to every Canadian market, the coach factors in, the GM factors in, and the GM, there's pressure on Dubas between now and the trade deadline. But there's going to be a bunch of games after the trade deadline. So it's on. Like, put it this way. What Keith said about his team, which was accurate, I think most people concurred. They were immature in Florida, immature against Chicago. If Babcock said it, the knives would have been out for Babcock. Why are they still immature under your tutelage? Why can't you get them to grow up? Why can't you get them to do this? Sheldon Keefe says it, and people are like, yep, he's right. Come on, guys. Like, it's all on the players. 33 games, all on the players. Let's see what you got. Because there's no guarantee your GM's going to do anything for you. He might. But if he doesn't, it doesn't mean you throw up the white flag.
You're still in the honeymoon phase with Sheldon Keefe.
Right.
Those comments would have been explosive under Mike Babcock.
It would have been wildfire here. We'd still be talking about them, which I guess in a way we are.
Right.
But with like vitriol, and right. Babcock would have been on the firing line if he said those comments.
Right.
Well, and mainly as you touched on, Brian, because he'd been there 4 or 5 years. And the view would have likely been, yeah, but if they're immature and you're still, and you've been the guy coaching them, then that's on you.
Right.
But right now it's a new coach, and you can look at that and say, well, he's trying to break some habits that these guys have and maybe the old way that they used to play. And so there is some rope for those comments to be played around with.
All right, buddy. We'll, I guess, catch up with you after the All-Star break on Monday when the Leafs are in Nashville.
Yeah, I'll be down there for Monday, and we'll see what the second half. I always call it the second half, even though they're well into it, but we'll see what the second half starts out like.
Yeah, they need to get rocking pretty quickly. It's not going to be easy, but we'll see. All right, buddy, enjoy the weekend. We'll do it Monday at 5.
Yeah, you guys too. Talk to you then.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They will pay your holiday bills up to $1,000 when you lease or finance a new in-stock vehicle in January. Visit MapleToyota.com. Noodles, I think you got your wish. I'm seeing online that maybe Laurent Brossoit will be starting for the Jets tonight.
He was, though. It's a back-to-back.
Was he starting anyway? Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, they played last night.
I just saw someone tweet out. Yeah. Laurent Brossoit will be starting tonight.
Larry Brossoit.
Okay, there you go.
He's not had a great season.
We'll see.
It's going to be unrestricted.
News out of New York featuring Eli Manning. We'll tell you about that, and we'll catch up with the GM of the Raptors, Bobby Webster, next. All right, Bobby Webster will be calling in just a moment. GM for the Raptors ahead of their game tonight with Philly in town. Big news out of New York. Your boy, Eli Manning, officially retiring.
I think that's Strutty's boy.
Is Strutty a big Giant fan?
I think he's a Giants guy, yeah.
The Grappler is a diehard.
Is he heartbroken, the Graps?
Yeah, Grappler said he is, but he obviously saw this coming. I mean, the next wave is here. Eli's done.
But they've been trying to... championships, MVP of both games.
They've been trying to rinse him for a while, though.
Yeah, they've had enough. Like, they drafted a quarterback in the top 10 a year ago. He took over for them this year, Eli doesn't have an option. He's not going to start in New York, and he can't play anymore, so he's not going to start anywhere else. He's not going to be a backup.
And it's not like he's struggling for money. Like, he'll be fine.
I believe Eli Manning has made more money than anyone else in NFL history, based on contract.
Really?
Yeah, because when he came in, he went first overall, and he was in that era, I believe, where, like, first overall picks were making, like, $40, $50 million right away.
Wow.
And he's been in the league for a long time and always just getting the max money or whatever. So he's made a lot of money. He's made a lot of money in endorsements, too.
Oh, for sure.
He and Peyton are in a ton of commercials.
Imagine the marketing they're going to do for the NFL with different commercials.
Do you want to get, do you want to take a run at what his lifetime record is as a starter for the New York Giants? He started over 200 games, 234 games to be precise.
I would guess it would be somewhere around even Steven.
I was going to say 500, 115, 115.
117 and 117. There exactly 500. exactly 500. But
the two Super Bowls.
Two Super Bowls. That's why he's going to the Hall of Fame. Like, if you take those out, which you're not, clearly you can't do when you're assessing a player. Eli, he had longevity. He started every single week. He was tough. But his stats aren't going to scream at you.
No.
Like, he was 117 and 117. 366 passing touchdowns, 244 interceptions, well under a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Like, it just, the stats are just there. Like, they're good. Longevity is worth a lot.
Yeah.
But two Super Bowls against the team that he beat both times, I do think is significant context. You beat New England, especially in 07 when they were 18-0 going into the Super Bowl. But yeah, Eli's going. I think he's going to get into the Hall of Fame.
You think he's a...
I think he's a lock, probably.
Unless somebody in New York doesn't like him and there's one vote that leaves it on the table. That's still bothering me.
You hate that Jeter didn't get 100% of the vote.
I hate the principle that one person didn't feel that he was the Hall
like
of Famer.
It's like an attention getter. He wants to be known as the one guy who comes out and says, it's my policy, never someone in the first year.
It's just a jackass. It's a jackass play. I don't
It could be someone that was doing it for publicity. I wouldn't put that past somebody.
I don't like it.
Someone who got a vote and is like, I've got a TV show or a podcast or something, and watch this. I'm not going to vote for him. I know he's getting in, but I'm going to be the one guy that doesn't give him the vote, and everyone's going to want to talk to me.
Ridiculous.
A lot of Hall of Fame talk right now. And I feel like Kyle Lowry's probably going there at some point for the Raptors. I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And maybe we can put the GM on the spot. I have a feeling he's probably going to say yes. He should be going to the Hall of Fame. Raptors with a big one tonight, taking on Philly. Here is the GM of the Raptors, Bobby Webster. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. This is a complete curveball that I'm sure you were not preparing for, but do you think that Kyle Lowry will one day be a pro basketball Hall of Famer?
You know, I wish I had that vote. You can probably guess which way I'd vote, but I think, he's got obviously winning the championship last year, and he's got the resume. And I think, if you ask him, he's got, a couple more years at a really high level, so he'll just be able to continue to add to that. And when it's all said and done, I think it'll be pretty convincing.
Yeah, I think he's getting there. I think his case has been made, and that championship clearly helps him. But how about the way he's responded this year? The shortest offseason of his career, he had surgery during the offseason. He's had an injury that cost him about a month earlier in the year. Yeah, he's playing a ton of minutes. He's been pretty consistent. What have you made of Kyle Lowry's game throughout the year?
He's playing as good as I've seen him play, and obviously since we've been here. And I think what you guys see is not necessarily what shows up in kind of the typical box score. It's all the little plays. It's the taking the charges. It's the making the big shots, down the stretch when we need them. So it's all the little Kyle Lowry things that we've grown to love about him, and, we're lucky to have him.
With Bobby Webster, GM of the Raptors. So I want to play this clip from Masai. He said something yesterday that has a lot of people buzzing in this market, and I think throughout the NBA, and even though he said it, I'm assuming you can expand on it or give us some more clarity on it. This is what Masai Ujiri had to say about your team contending for another championship this year.
Hey, we're going to die trying, that's for sure. I know these guys, and they're going to die trying. You see them, you see the attitude. We can be down. If anybody told you, I know nobody, not one person here in this place would tell me that they thought we would be competing now to be second in the East, in the next couple of games, if it works out for us, or where we are. There's not one person that thought that with a championship player like Kawhi, leaving. These guys have stepped up, and we appreciate what they've done.
So does that mean the players are going to die trying to repeat and win, or you and Masai are going to die trying to improve the team come the deadline?
All of us. No,
okay.
I mean, I think listening to quote, I wasn't at the event last night, but I listened to that earlier today. I think, it's more of kind of the mantra of who we are and the type of players on this team. And, you see they leave it all on the line. They left it all on the line last year. And I think, those guys, we talked about this offseason, all of those guys that came back, they have a ton of pride. And we tried to add to that bunch the same, type of character and work ethic. And that's just, the nature of who the Toronto Raptors are and the type of team that we want to put out on the floor. We know they'll give their best, and, it's on us as well to see if there's anything out there. And, I think if you look back last year, we did the deal 2 years ago, we didn't do a deal. 3 years ago, we did a deal at the deadline. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of, you know, who's out there, you know, takes two to tango type of thing with trades. But, you know, we're on the phones, we're talking, we're trying to see what's available and what's the cost and all that.
Well, there was a lot of debate in the market, and it wasn't courtesy of you guys. You guys never said anything, but with this expectation that there could be a step back, maybe a giant leap backwards, that Gasol and Ibaka and maybe Kyle, even though Kyle's got an extra year now on his deal, could be available via trade, and you guys would start thinking towards the future. Is it safe to say that based on what Masai said and what you just said, you guys have no intention between now and the deadline on taking a step back and looking beyond the 2019-2020 season?
You know, we're always going to be up. You know, no one's going to put us in on one side or the other. I think, you know, going back to the summer, what you said, which is really important, was there's always been this internal belief that, you know, we were going to compete again this year. All the experience that, you know, all the players gained last year was really important to their development. So I don't think there was ever a thought over the course of the summer or at any point during the year like, hey, this isn't going the way we wanted to. So, you know, it's a long way of saying we believe in our team, and you know, I think those guys have responded.
With Bobby Webster, GM of the Raptors. Raptors taking on Philly tonight. With all the injuries that your team has suffered, do you feel like you've even seen your best basketball yet this season?
Not for a sustained amount of time. I think, you know, we've all seen it for a quarter or maybe, you know, maybe a half here or there. You know, knock on wood, we have everybody healthy now, and we'll have, I guess, 2 weeks now before the deadline to watch. So I think we'll have a chance here. Not to say that we don't have a good idea of who our guys are, but you do want to see, you know, what are the roles look like? What's the rotation going to look like, especially down the stretch and into the playoffs as far as, you know, who are the core guys? Who are the guys off the bench that can help? So we are, you know, we are all formulating that throughout the season, but at least we do get to see it at this point in time, you know, right before, you know, some decisions may get made.
Well, you know, you speak about the stalwarts in the rotation and on this team. We all knew that Pascal was going to be playing a lot. We knew that Lowry was going to play a lot, and that regardless of starting or off the bench, if they're here, Gasol and Ibaka are likely going to play. But then you look at a guy like Norman Powell, who's had, you know, roller coaster tenure here in Toronto. There have been times where he's looked great. There have been times where he hasn't even factored in. He doesn't play. And he stepped up big time the second half of the playoff run last year, much like Van Vliet. And now he's on a five-game run where he's shooting the lights out and he's putting up massive numbers. You guys invested in him a couple of years ago. Is this what you always envisioned? And when you see something like that out of Norman Powell, does that maybe affect the way you're looking at a trade deadline?
Well, Norman's playing incredible right now. Obviously, he's on one. He's on one of those streaks that, you know, it's almost like you don't want to touch him. It's just like keep doing whatever you've been doing and you know, stay in your zone, stay in your rhythm. But, you know, that was a little bit of the design of the team coming into the summer was there's going to be opportunities for different players. Losing two starters off your team with Danny and Kawhi, there was going to be opportunity. There's going to be minutes. There's going to be shots. And so it was great to see. You know, Norman and Fred, obviously they battled through injuries, but they both stepped up into roles, you know, left behind by some of the players that departed this offseason. So, you know, it doesn't make it hard. It's great for the organization. It's great for Norman. It's great for Fred. That's what we want out of it. So, you know, we're excited to see what more they can bring.
Well, Norm is locked in. Van Vliet is not. Fred is due for a contract at the end of the year. It's not an overly deep class in terms of free agency. I got to think his number continues to tick up and up and up. How do you guys intend on handling the free agency of Fred VanVleet?
You know, we can't say a ton. I think the NBA binds us by a few rules, but we love Fred. He's an integral part of not only who we are on the court, but off the court as a leader. And, you know, when the time comes, we'll, you know, we're excited to get to work.
When you look at the East, Milwaukee has separated themselves. And then you've got a run of those, you know, five teams that include you, Philly, Indiana, Miami, Boston. And you're all within, like, a couple of games of each other. Do you think it's, based on the standings, appropriate to say Milwaukee is clearly the best team in the East? Or do you think that that's still up for debate?
I think Milwaukee's the number one seed. They've proven that. They're having an incredible season. I think two through six, there'll be a bit of a seeding game here as the playoffs, you know, approach us. you know, who's going to kind of finish where. And, you know, I think if, as people have seen in prior years, you don't want to get too cute. You kind of want to, you know, give it your best and kind of just see where the chips fall. But it'll be fun, and it'll be, you know, every night will be a battle, and we'll get to see the best from those teams. We get to see the best from ourselves, and I'm sure people look forward to, you know, exciting stretch run here.
How do you think that can help your team once you get to the playoffs?
Well, I think, you know, obviously you'll have the shared experience from this season. You know, a game like tonight's a great challenge for everyone. You know, kind of see where you stack up against one of those teams. You know, I'm sure we'll have, you know, many more, you know, against teams in this range. So, you know, you'll kind of get to see a little bit of, you know, what teams maybe you think you match up better with, you know, which players may match up in better series. So it gives Nick and the coaching staff a great opportunity to tinker with some things and experiment and try things out and you know, and preps for the real run.
Well, it's a big one tonight, like you said, taking on Philly. We look forward to that game. It's been a really quality ride so far. You guys will be busy over the next 2 weeks. We look forward to seeing what happens before the trade deadline. And as always, we appreciate you taking time. Thank you for this.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the support.
You got it. There he is, Bobby Webster, GM of the Raptors. Raptors Sixers tonight.
Wouldn't bite on you. You know, he did say all of the above.
Yeah, all of the above. We're all in. We're all willing to die for the cause here to try to win a second championship. But
He also said we can't really talk about some things with Van Vliet, but guess who can? All the other players around the league.
Yeah, but like we know, the Raptors are not going to get outbid unless it's crazy. Like unless some teams like here's a max deal and the Raptors just don't put the same valuation on Fred, but if it's within a few million dollars, they're going to match it. They're not going to let Van Vliet leave. They found him. He was undrafted. They signed him. They locked him in. He's grown here. By all accounts, he loves being a Raptor. I think he's going to want to return. They're going to have to put up or shut up. But
any rumblings of anyone visiting the games every game?
I keep hearing Detroit is a team that is going to push
Durant
for him.
Is sitting there.
Brooklyn? Yeah. I mean, he's got nothing else to do. He's just rehabbing and sitting around. But Kyrie Irving is the, you know, point guard down there, and he's the hero.
Or acts like a hero.
He acts like a hero. Like, we didn't get into his comments from a week ago where he, like, just basically called out the whole team, the whole organization.
Yeah.
And he's barely played. He's been injured the whole year. You just got here. You don't even know anybody. Like, I found that to be so disrespectful and just a bogus comment from a guy who thinks he's accomplished something.
But that, didn't that reek of what he did in, was it in Boston where he was being a hero and then he even called LeBron and was like, I see what you meant about these young kids.
Yeah, and he's like 26 years old.
Like, remember, he was such
so
a
much
hero.
Money, like just so much everything, and you just can't stop yourself.
Yeah, when you make that much money and the team caters to you, which is what they did.
Yeah,
they
like
brought
God
in,
forbid if they sat him down for a week and said, we're suspending you, we're fining you without pay, whatever the hell, but he would go crazy.
Well, Brooklyn was a playoff team last year. Like, Kyrie Irving comes in and is like, we need to add a couple of extra players. I've seen it.
Yeah,
I know what we need.
Trying to act like LeBron, but doing it in like a total D-bag way.
You haven't accomplished anything as a standalone player. LeBron, you rode LeBron's coattails all the way to an NBA Finals 4 years in a row.
Yep.
Or 3 years in a row before he left. And I don't know. Zion Williamson returning tonight as well down in New Orleans.
That'll be good.
Jerry's percentages. We missed out on Jerry at 5:30. He's going to call in at 6 o'clock.
Nice.
So a rare 6 p.m. appearance from Jerry. Jerry's percentages in about 20 minutes. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, will be in studio later in the afternoon as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so we've got a new assignment for the O-Desk. We got to find out if that car has been removed from the Queen's Quay, the streetcar.
I don't mean to laugh. There were no injuries, were there?
I don't believe so. No.
I used to live down there, and you can kind of get jammed up a little bit. And
no, I think immediately whoever did that, you pull them out of the car and you take their license away, and that's it.
Yeah, it's a bruised ego. I'm guessing that's probably going to put this gentleman on the IR. But what happened is, and if you've driven downtown, you know this. Down at the Queen's Quay, anywhere where there's a streetcar hub where they go underground, if you're following a streetcar, and I have done this many times, if you're not really paying attention and then all of a sudden it dips into the tunnel, you might follow it in. I have seen this before.
A couple times I've seen it.
But you stop, and you're like, oh, I'm going into the tunnel. What am I doing?
Right.
But you don't drive right through into the tunnel and then try to hang a right and then get your car stuck like you can see up on the up on TSN 4. And I guess it completely shut down the whole station down at Queens Quay today.
Well, yeah,
and
I don't know.
The O-Desk is on the case trying to figure out what happened there.
Well, he might have had a bit of a tough day.
It sounds like it was an elderly gentleman.
I believe it was, yeah. And I think it might have been rush hour, too. Like, that which really jammed up a lot of people.
Which is really going to piss people off more. They're trying to get home, and this guy, you know, has decided to go out for a Sunday drive.
I guess what could happen is if you're not from the city and not familiar with the streetcar system, I guess maybe you could think it's just an underpass. Like, you might follow it right in, but they don't go straight in. If you've been underneath the one at Queens Quay, the one at St. Clair West, there's a bunch of them all over the city.
Yeah.
Like, they get underneath, and then immediately they start turning. So I'm sure he just followed the streetcar, and then eventually his car got stuck, and he realized he was in big trouble. I don't know how you get it out of there either.
Well, I think that's where you clean out the glove compartment of anything that belongs to you, and you get out and you run. And
you
just pretend like, you know, and
you leave the car there.
You leave the car and you run, and then you report it stolen and say, somebody stole my car. I can't find it. Because unless they're going to have cameras. I'm joking, obviously.
That's the signature.
They're going to have cameras of you running away from the car.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Now, let's be honest. A lot of times it happens because someone's been drinking or smoking, and they're like, I got to get out of here. But there have been sober incidents where someone has done something and they've just run away from the car. And, like, what do you think is going to happen? The police are going to show up and be like,
it's a panic move. They're freaking out and they've never dealt with accidents or policemen, or that's their move. They freak out.
So it's like an anxiety thing.
That's right.
For sure.
I see.
You're
okay, well, then I guess so.
I mean, we've all.
But it's not like you can expect not to be caught. Like, they're just going to be like, all right, these are your plates. That's your car. And knock, knock, knock.
Right.
Where'd you go? Right?
Yeah, you're right. We've all been pulled over. You can get pulled over. You have anxiety because.
Absolutely.
You're thinking, what did I do? You're coming up. You know, like, you never know. They run a search through the computer. You got a ticket from 28 years ago that you forgot to pay, or, you know, you're always.
Every time I go to Service Ontario and I say the big question, I know it's going to be ugly. Can I have an update on the parking tickets?
Well, yeah.
The look on her face is, every time it's 1,000+.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Pay one.
Where are you parking,
yeah,
too?
Like,
why can't you find parking?
Sidewalk.
I live in a busy area in Etobicoke, and if just there's something, I'll be like, I'm just not doing it today.
Yeah, well, that.
It doesn't sound like you do it any day. Like, there's not one day where you're willing to do it.
Or any time, ever.
It's not that hard.
I guess you're right. I guess I just refuse to. It's such a lazy thing to do. I guess it's like making your bed. It's so easy, but guess what I don't do?
Yeah, I don't really do that much either, I guess.
I make my bed every morning. I go and make everyone's bed.
Everybody's bed?
Yes.
What's the sense? No one's going to see it?
You walk by, like, and you see an unmade bed. That's how you live your life, right there. That's how you live your life.
That's your generalization? Did you grow up in a military family by chance?
No, not at all. It's just, I live, like, I've got kids. And everywhere, like, at night, in the morning, it's a nice assembled house, and at night, it's like a bomb went off in there. So you clean it up,
yeah, it's a
and
pig
you do
style.
It all again every...
Yeah, we do
the same
thing.
If you don't clean it up,
but
it just piles up and piles up and piles up.
That's true. I hear you, but...
And Peg Bundy's not doing it, so who's going to do it?
Yeah, I do... We do a cleanup at the end of the day as well. I don't do a full making of the bed. I will adjust to make sure that it's in
the comforter. Over.
Yeah, it's in like a capable position.
Yeah,
that's about it. I guess it's presentable, but you sound like you do the full tuck and everything's got to be.
I like how you went from I don't make the bed to like, well, I kind of.
Well, I make an adjustment. I'm not making the bed, but I'll make an adjustment.
Nobody's in my condo. My wife's friends aren't in my condo. No one's seeing my condo, so I don't care.
Okay.
And it's not like my car, which is a sideshow. It's a nice house.
Do we have the audio of the guy who quit his job on CP24 today? Oh, we don't have that.
Oh,
that's what I was told. Our boy Normie is running things on TV today, and Norm Peterson said that because Ossington Station had a big problem today. There was some issue at Ossington, and it was like a 4-hour delay, so they weren't like you couldn't even get out of the station.
Oh.
And with the snowfall and all that, with snow removal, I guess it was just a gong show.
A gong show, yeah.
And CP24 must have sent a reporter there. and they witnessed some guy talking. He was on his phone, and all they heard was him say, "Fine, I guess I quit." And then I guess the guy did a one-on-one with whoever was there, and the reporter was like, "I just heard you quit. Like, what's the backstory there, if you don't mind me asking?" And the guy basically said, "My boss told me if I'm late again, I'm fired, and I can't get there because Ossington Station is an absolute disaster. So I said, if that's going to be the case anyway, I'll beat you to it, and I quit." So the TTC cost some guy his job today.
Well, I'm sure this cat has been doing this for quite some time.
Yeah, that's not his first time. If he has multiple times of being late, now I don't know if that's the people mover's fault every time, but find a better way to get to work. Like, get up earlier. There's the one thing.
Well, that's
take an earlier bus or train or whatever you need to do, but I'm sure this guy needs his beauty sleep, so we don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. If you're at a position as a boss where you're telling a guy one more time and you're fired, not we're having a conversation, you're fired, that means you're late all the time.
Right.
So blaming Ossington Station or the TTC.
It's a lazy narrative.
Probably a lazy excuse.
Yep.
Jerry's Percentages and Darren Dreger at studio in the final hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.